again. Cash is pay to play. You want more hits than lemonade? No, you don't own me. You don't even know me. This vagabond with a two-part path to the great beyond. Say genuine, a ground floor up, I can help you find. You're a dreamer, call me when you're Bieber. And when they play it, you can't help but sing along. That's nothing odd, that's nothing wrong. Cause a good song never dies. It just reminds you of where you were. The first time it made you cry, the first time you felt alive. No good song never.
Welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you along tonight, everybody. We got a special guest tonight, a gentleman who we really don't get a chance to talk to a lot of these people who do some great work on the big screen or on, well, even on the little screen. We don't get a lot of chance to talk to people. We've had a few stars of the screen on, and certainly a few people that work behind the scenes, but this guy's kind of done it all. When we will get to meet him here very shortly. So let's not waste any of his time. Let's get into this. I want to bring in this gentleman who is a film director who has worked in a number of roles behind the camera in both film and television. He's a proud Métis man who has done research for the APTN show The Medicine Line and a new production airing soon on APTN entitled Going Native. He is currently working on Alice and Kevin, the story of a mother fighting for services for a disabled son on a remote reserve, and The Ken Plain Way, about the life and career of one of the greatest players in CFL history. Tonight, though, we'll learn about his work on The Tournament, a story that he wrote and directed that is very near and dear to his heart. With that, folks, ladies and gentlemen, The Hockey Show is proud, honored, privileged, humbled, and pleased to welcome film director and writer of The Tournament, Sam Vint, to the show. How are you, Sam?
Oh, I'm flattered. That's I'm good. How about you, Trevor?
I am doing very well, thank you. Thanks for coming on and being part of this. Before we get started, obviously living in the present time, how's everything going? Everybody safe? Everybody healthy?
Yeah, we're doing, all things considered, we're doing fantastic. And I just wanted to point out, you're the first interview I've had who's pronounced Ken Plain's name properly.
Oh, really? Oh, I mean, don't get me wrong, big sports fan. So Kenny Plain is a second nature to me in terms of pronouncing his name right. So before we get going, though, I want to make sure we pump the tires a little bit for what's going on. I want to toss out some promotion for the work that you and your son Isaac were involved in the film that we're going to be talking about. The Tournament, which was written and directed by you, starring Isaac, debuted on the National Film Board of Canada's website yesterday, and I link back to it on Hockey Blog in Canada. It's a fun 22-minute look at the ups and downs of the Manitoba Sledgehammers, a tournament that took place at Bethel University in St. Paul, Minnesota. Did I get that right? Is that right, St. Paul, Minnesota?
No. It's in Blaine, Minnesota, and it was Blaine. National Hockey Center or something.
Okay.
It used to be called a different name, so they changed the National Ice Hockey Sports Center in Blaine, Minnesota.
Okay, because there wasn't, I was trying to locate where the tournament was, and I think the only one that came up when I was searching for it was the one in Bethel, so maybe I had it wrong, and I clearly had it wrong, which is good, but at least I had the state right. I was a little closer than
yeah, you're real close.
You know what, where I could have been.
The only thing that really is interesting about that is the National Sports Center is the biggest ice hockey facility in the world.
Oh, wow.
There's 10 sheets there, and it's an incredible facility. The whole thing is really neat.
That's awesome. Good to go see. I have to make a pilgrimage at some point down to to that area then and check out Blaine, Minnesota for that setup. But let's get into this, because the tournament, like I said, I watched it. I thought it was fantastic. I want to ask you, Sam, because it looks like this project was not only a barrel of fun to film, but also, starring your son Isaac, it's a little nearer and dear, as we said, to your heart. Where did the idea for this project sort of come from? And obviously, how much fun did you have filming the entire sort of process?
I think I should point out my daughter is also on the team.
Right, yeah.
Isaac's older sister, Cooper.
Correct, yeah.
And the idea came from when we first got the diagnosis that my son was had spina bifida, I'd played a lot of team sports and coached, and I was involved in football and basketball, and I was kind of obviously upset about it, and then I thought, God, I gotta hide my past. So he, you know, my son obviously isn't going to be able to compete in these sports, and that's going to be a tough conversation. So maybe I just hide that, you know? And then when he was 3 years old, we heard about sledge hockey and we went to the arena, and it was, you know, life-changing. And sledge hockey means a lot to our family, and I'd say everybody who's involved in it. And it's more than just a sport, which is what I hope the documentary shows.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've gotten a chance a couple of times, been on a sled with Billy Bridges when he's been in town, and certainly got a chance to sort of, you know, talk with him and figure out the game itself. And I got to say, I have a whole new appreciation for just how athletic sledge hockey players are based upon my experiences, because I'm not very good. So, I mean, watching Isaac and obviously watching, you know, Cooper ripping around on the ice, he's light years ahead of where I would be. Did he pick it up quickly when he was younger and obviously getting a little bit older?
Yeah, you know, in a way, you know, I'm not actually a hockey person. Like, I don't skate. I didn't really play when I was younger. We went to our first sledge game. Isaac had never actually seen a hockey game.
Oh, wow.
And so at first, and he's, you know, 4 years old when he's doing it, so it's more socializing and playing. And in sledge, when you're some people who have, like, their arms are affected by their challenges, or they're very small, like Isaac was, they have somebody who pushes them around. So Isaac would have somebody push him around, and he would spend most of his time looking at me and his mom, smiling or talking and really didn't have a understanding of the game right away. And then, but year two, then the end of the year, we went to a tournament, and him, and what we found over the years is kids that play sledge, when we go to our one tournament a year, and it's the first time, it's usually the only time we get to play other competition, just their abilities just explode down there. Like, they you know, whatever they've gained over the season, they double it at the tournament for some reason. And Isaac was one of those kids.
As a parent, obviously, older child in terms of Cooper being older than Isaac, was it one of those things where you wanted to get, you know, obviously if Isaac getting into it is important, obviously giving you a chance to do something athletic, but was it something that Cooper sort of wanted to do as well? Or was it like sort of an organic, hey, if he's doing it, why don't you do it as well, Cooper?
Yeah. Organic would be the best way to describe it. And it happened at that first tournament. And honestly, it had not even occurred to me. And we were in the middle of the first period, game one, Cooper leaned over and was like, can I play sledge hockey next year? And it's like, yes, of course you can. It'd be fantastic. So she's been playing, I guess, 4 years now, and Isaac's been playing about five.
That's awesome. Good for them in terms of getting on the ice and having some fun. Do they work well? I mean, obviously, you know, brother and sister, and they see each other every day. Do they work well together on the ice, though? Are they pretty good teammates?
They are terrible teammates, and they do not play well together on the ice. When we play in the tournament, actually, in the documentary, you see Cooper assists on a goal that Isaac has and is very happy for him, but it practices. We're trying to figure out, because if they're on opposite teams, they end up fighting and, like, have literally dropped the gloves. And then if they're on the same team, he tends to steal her shifts. So she, you know, quite often it's a tough ride home from the arena.
That's okay. I guess that's a little bit of the rivalry there, and both players wanting to be out there, both kids wanting to be out there. I mean, there was a bit of a gap between my brother and I. We didn't get to play a lot of teams, so I thought it'd be kind of cool if, you know, if they're playing together. But yeah, no, if they're natural rivals, that's not going to be very good at all. So
they push each other to get better.
That's good. How enthusiastic were the players? I mean, obviously you followed the Manitoba Sledgehammers team. How enthusiastic were they in terms of, you know, being in the film and getting on, you know, onto the big screen?
They loved it. And I mean, I think it comes through in the documentary. You can see they eat up the camera. You know, there's a couple of, I remember we had a big talk with them. It's like, okay, we're pretending the camera's not here. Don't look at it. You know, we're just going to go. And man, they're staring straight into the camera talking to it. You know, it's like Isaac was dying to get mic'd. He thought that was the coolest thing ever. And yeah, all the kids and the families and what we call the Sledgehammer family were really excited. I've been talking about it for a while. We'd been about a year in editing. And so it's really nice for it to finally come out and everybody get to see it.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I'm going to recommend everybody go see it. I'm going to, like I said, I have everything linked on my blog in terms of getting things ready for people to view it as well. So I noticed, and this is something that I was kind of wondering about as the film sort of finished there. Tyler Funk was the director of photography. Was he the guy on the ice with the camera, or was that you following everybody around, Sam?
Oh, no, that was Tyler. I don't even see him, actually.
So I was going to say, there are some pretty good shots that he got in there. And then there was other times he was like, it looked like he was just trying to keep up with everybody. But I mean, I thought it was a fantastic view, because I don't think people appreciate just how fast the game is, or how athletic the athletes are when you're on the ice. And these guys are pulling off all sorts of crazy moves on the ice.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point, Trevor. And one of the things that I guess really had got this documentary made is what makes it a bit more unique is I've watched pretty much everything with sledge hockey on, you know, YouTube and documentaries, and you don't see it shot the way we shot it, and the way Tyler got in with the kids, and it's just, he's such a good camera guy, and we got, like, what you see is, you know, 10% of what we have. Like, we could do hour-long cuts of the game that look great, you know, they flow just because of the way the shooting is and the way sledge hockey is. It's just, it's like a unchoreographed ballet sometimes. It's just so smooth and flowing.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I've watched enough now that I, you know, on TV that I kind of go, like, man, that on-ice sort of angle that you get would be totally different compared to what I mean. I know that some of the kids have, you know, had the GoPros and stuff on the back of their sleds and everything. And I think that kind of angle would be kind of cool at some of the higher levels to see how fast they actually move and some of the stuff that they do on the ice. So maybe that's the future of sledge hockey. Who knows? I want to talk specifically about the tournament then. Did you know any of the teams going into the tournament? Did you know of how good they were going into the tournament?
Yeah, we had played two of the teams, and then I think our arch rivals in that tournament, the Wisconsin team, that was their first year in our division. They had been in a higher division, and they had dropped down because they didn't win a game, I think, the year before. And what you see in the doc and something we don't explain a lot in the documentary. We just kind of show it to you, and there's no voiceover, there's no text on the screen, and that, so there's a lot that you kind of got to figure out. And I think what sticks out is that Wisconsin team looks a lot older than our team.
Yes.
Yeah. And they were, they're from like a rural Wisconsin town, and like in Winnipeg, there's one sledge hockey team at that age level, cause there's just not enough players. And so a small town, Wisconsin, they're scrapping to get whoever they can.
Right.
And then when you go to the tournament, it's 17 and under. So the age range is huge. You know, Isaac's 8 in it, and he's playing against that one guy. He's 17, you know, and there's a couple of other 16-year-olds and stuff like that on the team. And it kind of goes by, you know, the first year we went to the tournament, we won it. The last couple of years we've come in second. And it's kind of how your teams unfold in a year-to-year basis. You know, we had some pretty good players that moved up that could have came to the tournament. And then, so we were a lot younger, but it depends on the year. Next year, if there is a tournament, we might, you know, have an older team and be the ones that dominate, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I won't give away the results of the games. I want people to get over to the National Film Board site, nfb.ca, watch the film, obviously check out everything that's going on with the tournament. But you guys played the Minnesota Wild, the Colorado Avalanche, and as you said, the Wisconsin Skeeters. Mm-hmm. I legitimately cracked up though when Isaac was in the dressing room talking about checking the larger Skeeters players and stated, quote, he was a 21-year-old AB they hired, like he's a hired gun. Yes. Do you like seeing Isaac and Cooper compete against the older kids and maybe showing their stuff off a little bit to prove just how far they've come?
Yeah, you know what? Like that game is, well, you know, as I said, I've coached for decades, and that is one of my favorite amateur games I've ever been to. Like they, you know, the Sledgehammers played so well in that game, and it was, they were playing a tougher team, you know, and there was definitely a moral victory there for, at the very least.
Yeah. I mean, I won't give away the results in terms of what happened, but I thought, I mean, weird question. Was that you coaching or was that somebody else coaching in the film?
That we have a couple of coaches that are like parents, and then we have Bill Malloyne, who's featured in the film, and he's the father of Manitoba sledge hockey. He's part of starting it and has been around with it for forever. And he's really the only adult voice. I get, my wife has a short bit in it, but he's the main adult voice in the movie.
I really thought that his comments after that game against the Skeeters were fantastic to the team, where, you know, nobody was down. Everybody was sort of positive after it. And he really pointed that out. I thought that was excellent for, you know, a coach coming in and sort of, you know, building on a negative that, you know, you lost, but here's all the good that we did. And I mean, that's always a good thing to hear from a coach. One of the teammates that Isaac had, and I actually knew about her before, and I recognized her when she was on film, was Alyssa White, who made the Canadian women's national sledge hockey team last year as a 14-year-old. I mean, how cool is it that, you know, one of the sledgehammers is now playing on the national team?
Oh, we were just over the moon about it. When the news first happened, it was it was big news in our community, and still is. And she's such a great kid, and like, what a competitor, you know. As you'll see in the film, like, she's fierce, you know, and it's part of what we're trying to get across in the film is on in everyday life, they're in wheelchairs and they have all these obstacles and it's tough for them to get around, and they get on the ice and it's a total flip, you know. Now they're in charge and they're the ones who are the most mobile, and Alyssa is unbelievable on the sled. That girl can skate.
She stood out, and I mean, so did Isaac in terms of some of the plays that you guys showed on the film there. And I just, like I said, I was just shocked at, I mean, I'm not shocked at how good she was, but as a 14-year-old, she looks like she plays like she's much older in terms of just the way she maneuvers around on the ice there. So I thought it was super cool to see her out there. One of the guys that Isaac met, though, was Danny Lilia, who I think has an outstanding story. Have you kept up with Danny's story? Do you know anything that's gone on past the point of where Isaac spoke to him?
Oh yeah, no, we're big Lilia family fans, and in the documentary, like, Isaac was, we were aware of Danny. It's our first tournament we went to. Danny was on the junior national American team, and he played for the Minnesota Wild, in that tournament. And he was there, and they just didn't have enough kids, so they brought Danny, who was way better than everybody else. Like, he's the right age, but he was just so good that he just played defense and just kept the puck in their end and didn't really participate too much in the game. And then I think it was the third period of the last game we were playing them, and Isaac and I was standing over Isaac because in sledge the kids stay on the ice. Mm-hmm. And I was in the box standing over, and the puck came back to Danny at the blue line, and he wired one to the top corner, and you just don't see that, you know. Like, it was a really impressive shot, and from that moment, Isaac was a big Danny Lilia fan.
I was gonna say that I guess that's where the question came from, because he asked him, how do you raise the puck? And I mean, that wasn't shown on the film, but now that we know, that makes total sense.
Well, it's also like, what he first says, and we're trying to find a way to show this, and we just decided to just let it go, is he said, what that is, Danny's, if you go to YouTube and look up Danny Lilia, he was the pinner for his high school football team.
Yeah.
And then he got an opportunity to go pin for the Vikings, and they gave him Super Bowl tickets. It's really cool. But that video is what Isaac showed me to convince me that Isaac should play football. And now we are, he has signed up to play for the Nomads this year.
Oh, no way. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So Danny Lilia is we like that guy.
Yeah, no doubt. I was doing a little more research into it. I don't know, again, how much you've kept up with it. Danny, who, as you said, was the holder for the kickers for the Moose Lake Rebels, went mm-hmm. to the Super Bowl, was out there with the Vikings, got to hold balls for their place kicker. Last summer, he won the high school state championship for shot put the second year in a row, which I think is fantastic for him. Mm-hmm. Came in second place in discus. But the big thing is, in September, he'll be attending the University of North Dakota as the first physically challenged student admitted into the air traffic controller program, while his older brother completes the program to become a commercial pilot. So I think that what Danny's doing is fantastic, number one. And number two, yeah, you're right. I mean, for being sort of, you know, wheelchair bound, he's let nothing hold him back, which is phenomenal to see.
Oh, and I should point out, Danny made the Dean's List.
That's awesome. Congratulations, yeah. Danny.
No, but he, him and Isaac really hit it off because they're both kind of bad boys. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of that conversation, which is very funny, that we did not include in the documentary because it got to a bit adult.
That's okay. That's all right. Nothing wrong with that.
Advice on swearing on the ice.
I was going to ask. I mean, we know, you know, when I've talked to Billy a couple times, I mean, you know, there's a rivalry between the U.S. and Canada, and everybody knows that. And it's always going to be, you know, at the pinnacle of sort of rivalries. It's always going to be, are there arch enemies, all that kind of stuff. How much, I mean, is there a lot of trash talking at sort of a competition at a tournament that goes in like this? Like, do you, when guys are going down the hallway, you know, one way and the other, is there a bit of a, you know, trash talk back and forth, a little bit of a laugh after that? Or is it fairly friendly on the ice, being that everybody sort of knows everybody?
Oh no, they get petty. Yeah. Yeah. Those kids, no, they, I think Isaac, the second year we went to the tournament, like I brought him into the elevator and there was a kid from Minnesota there and Isaac just started trash. I was like, I couldn't believe it. You know, I was like, hey man, that's not cool. Like, and that is carried forward. And yeah, it depends on the team. Like we play Minnesota. We play those guys all the time. They're our main rivals, but there's a lot of respect there. They're a great program and they run things very, very well. But that, like the Skeeters, there was a ton of trash talking in that game.
Oh, that's fantastic, Ben. At least there's some fun happening and game within the game, right?
Trash talking that happens in that world, though. You know, like Isaac was asked if he had feet. You know, it was very, it was very strange stuff that went on. And I know, it was a hotly contested game.
I was gonna say, you said they're a bit, you know, a little bit of a newer team. Maybe they're just breaking into the trash talk on the ice as well. Then, so yeah. I mean, it's clear that Isaac has feet. So
yeah.
As a hockey fan, I'm always surprised, and this is something that I've noticed more and more as I've gotten older, and certainly you know been looking at more opportunities for hockey in Manitoba. We don't see a lot of sledge hockey in and around the rinks of Winnipeg. Like I know Billy's done some pretty good stuff in terms of, you know, creating a rink and getting rinks set up for sledge hockey and bringing more opportunities to Winnipeg. But do you feel, and I hate to say this because I don't think it's true. I just don't think it's, you know, as in the front of everybody's mind as much. But do you feel like there isn't enough coverage by the media here for what some of these sledge hockey players are doing? Like, I mean, I know that I was interested in Alyssa's story. But outside of Alyssa and Corinne Wenge, there really isn't a lot of news out there about what some of the great sledge hockey players from this city are doing.
No, it's interesting, and it's a good point because if you like, you watch our national sledge teams, both the men and the women are phenomenal, and they are, you know, top three in the world every single year, every single competition, and really US, Canada are at another level compared to most sledge teams. So yeah, they are amazing. And to watch them play is, you know, you watch the tournament and it's great. And this is a really fast skater. And, you know, there's a couple of kids with some great shots, but then you go see senior level sledge hockey. It's a different game. Like it is amazing how good those people are. And I think to appreciate it, everybody should get into a sled and try to carry a puck down the ice.
Yes.
And keep the momentum going because that is super hard, you know. And the kids, we tend to play, we'll play a friendly game against a high school team once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, high-level high school teams, we got a bunch of little kids, and they just ravage them, you know. It's like, we played one team, they had a couple of set plays, and they got breakaways, but the breakaway is, you know, coming as from experience, somebody who plays about once or twice a year, it's super hard and it gets really frustrating because it to carry the puck and momentum is almost impossible. You need to practice. You don't just figure that out. You know,
I had a good laugh. And I mean, everything you just said is entirely true. I had a good laugh though, when when Isaac and your wife were having the chat in the hotel room while he was sort of, you know, still in bed and talking about like, you can see the competitive fire burn in him. Is the goal? I mean, obviously the goal is, you know, hopefully he'll go and play Olympics one day or, you know, at least high level, but is the goal, I mean, to try and sort of stifle the win, 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 and maybe, you know, learn at his age, or is it just let him get out there and just love the game?
Well, I mean, he loves the game.
Right.
And he's a bit too competitive, so we try to reel that in every once in a while. And you see, my wife Trish tries there, and that actually we had a screening of it the other night, and that's one of those, you know, you don't really know when you're making the documentary. I thought it was pretty funny, but holy, did that get a laugh!
Oh, like I said, he was just so focused on beating Wisconsin. I was like, man, like the kid's got the fire of a professional hockey player already. That's fantastic.
He wants to win.
Oh, I mean, and like I said, I mean, I'm so happy that he's enjoying. Is Cooper the same way? She got the same burning desire to win all the time?
No, she and she's great. Like Cooper is the greatest teammate. Like she, I think 3 years ago in the tournament, she scored like a ton of goals. She had almost a hat trick a game. And then and the way sledge hockey is developing now is your better players play defense and maybe they don't score as much, but they really control the game.
Yeah.
So Cooper, last couple of years, has played nothing but defense and has barely left the ice and has hardly scored any goals. And she's perfectly happy to do that. You know, she is a coach's dream. I love, you know, I love the way she practices. I love the way she plays. She listens. She gets back on defense. And where Isaac might be a little shirk his duties to try to get a breakaway a little more often.
That is okay, though. I mean, at least he's having fun and enjoying it. I'm glad that Cooper's got found a spot, though. I mean, it's always – I mean, we knew – I mean, I was surprised when Billy told me he was switching from forward to defense, and he sort of said the same thing, you know, but the whole trend in the sport right now is to have your best players control the ice a little bit more, and the defenders do that. So it's nice to hear that, you know, Cooper's got enough skill that she can be sort of one of those players that holds down the back end and certainly controls the game a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I know we got a few minutes left before we gotta let you get out of here, Sam. I do want to point out some other stuff, though. I want to mention you've done a lot of work alongside Indigenous communities, including interviewing residential school survivors across Canada, as well as writing and directing a movie about the murder of your great-great-great-grandfather, Elziar Goulet. Is that right? Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And the digitized work of your great-grandmother, the famed Métis poet Marie-Thérèse Goulet-Courchene, or Manitoby. I know you just wrapped up some research on the new APTN project as well, Going Native. No spoilers needed here, nothing that you have to sort of, you know, give away for free, but is there a next project that Sam Vint, movie maker extraordinaire, has his mind on or is currently working on?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff, and I think we're working on season two of that Going Native, and that same production company, it's Ice River Films. We have another film series that we're going into pre-production on. And I have about a million documentaries I want to make. So I'm working on that. I'm hoping to make some CFL films in the not too distant future.
Oh, right on.
And like a lot of sports stuff, but there's a couple of Indigenous films I think that would be important. And now that I made a film with the NFB, I think those are kind of NFB style area films. So maybe one of those.
That's fantastic. Congratulations on all the success. I'm going to give you a bit of a soapbox then. I know a last word sort of going to you. Where can, if people are interested, how can they get involved? How can they play? How can they be, you know, get their kids involved with the Sledgehammers? And where would they come to see you guys if they want to come see you guys play?
Oh, that's a good point, Trevor. Thank you. The Sledgehammers, we're part of the Manitoba Sledge Hockey Association, which is online. You can find us just by Googling. We tend to play every Sunday at the MTS Iceplex out by the Assiniboine Downs. There is a sledge hockey adapted rink, and it is all day there will be sledge there. You start with the novice or the Sledgehammers in the early afternoon, and then it goes for the rest of the day as it just gets the novice team and then the senior team. And so there's a full day of sledge hockey there if you ever want to come and see it. The later you go, the higher level the hockey would be. And I think that's basically where you will see us the most.
Are there sleds available if people want to try out while they're there?
Yeah, if you would email Bill Moyne, who is with Manitoba Possible, which used to be the Society for Manitobans with Disabilities, but he's part of the sledge hockey website. And we do things like we played with a lot of minor teams where we'll bring all the sleds and then the what we would call a stand-up team can get on the sleds and we'll play a game. We go to Winkler every year and play. We played against the fire department there and different teams. Stuff like that. So, yeah, we don't get a chance to play other teams that much, so we are up for it. If you get a hold of Bill through Sledge Hockey Manitoba, I'm sure something could happen there.
I will make sure I link that along with everything else, in terms of getting that on both the blog that I write and then on obviously on this as well. When we're on UMFM, I'll have that link there as well. So I'll have all that linked and people can go and check that out if you want. Visit the two sites, either my blog, Hockey Blog in Canada, or on UMFM.com. For any more information for that, I'll have Bill's email link there as well. And make sure you get over to the National Film Board of Canada's website, that's nfb.ca, and check out the tournament, Sam Vint's documentary about the Manitoba Sledgehammers and the fun and the craziness they had in Blaine, Minnesota, at a tournament that stars Isaac Vint, Cooper Vint, and a pile of fun-loving other kids that legitimately, I thought that the portion at the end that you did, Sam, where every one of the kids sort of gave a stare down to the camera was absolutely priceless. That was phenomenal ending to that documentary.
Oh, man. You know, Ed, I was thinking of that for the start of the documentary, and when we put it together, we put it at the end, and it was like, yeah, that's perfect.
Like, the look that Isaac gives right at the end is priceless. Like, kid looks like he's ready to rumble right there, and I just couldn't, like, that's a perfect finish for this movie. So you did a great job. I was excited. I certainly watched it a number of times, actually, just to get A, research done, but B, because it's hilarious too, and I think that you did a fantastic job with the film as well, Sam. So thanks for coming on to the Hockey Show and talking about it.
Thanks, I really appreciate you having me on.
Not a problem, Sam. Door's always open too. If you guys want to come back and talk about the tournament, if you guys are going away this year, feel free to come back and you know, hit me up, and we'll get you guys back on the show and talk everything about sledge hockey again with you for sure.
Okay, thanks a lot, Trevor.
Okay, thank you.
So there is Sam Vint. Happy to have had him on the show talk about his film, The Tournament. Make sure you get over to the National Film Board of Canada website or check out Hockey Blog in Canada from yesterday. Everything is going to be on there. Everything is on there. But go see The Tournament. It's a 22-minute film. It is absolutely priceless. I think you'll, even the coldest hearts will break and certainly thaw out a little bit with seeing Isaac and the kids and Cooper and everybody play hockey in this tournament. It's a fun look at a great sledge hockey tournament. I want to thank Sam for coming on the show and for being part of that. We're going to take a quick break here on the Hockey Show. Be right back to talk about some of the bigger news that's happened over the last week. There's been a lot of hockey, a lot of Canada West news, and we're gonna go through all that in a couple minutes. So stay tuned, folks. Back in a couple seconds here on the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Where are you boys headed?
Canada. We're going over the border to Canada for some french fries and gravy, sir.
Poutine. Canada, huh? Almost made it.
You're listening to the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
You smell something, rabbit? Fear.
Welcome back, folks, here to the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM. Glad to have you along, everybody. I want to thank Sam Vint once more for coming on the first half of the show there and giving us a quick, brief introduction to The Tournament, a great movie that he wrote and directed over on the National Film Board of Canada's website. Get over to nfb.ca and check that out if you can. Also linked on Hockey Blog in Canada if you want to go and check out my website. In saying that, though, we got a lot to go over, a lot of big news, a lot of crazy news out of the hockey world as we saw from this week. Let's start with the biggest news of all. The Buffalo Sabres decided to shuffle the deck once more. I know that this shouldn't come as a surprise, as they seem to do this every couple of years, especially under the Pegulas. But this one was big. This one had a total of 22 staff members from various different locations within the organization fired over the last day and a half. Or 2 days, I guess. 22 people. It's a lot of bloodletting if you're making changes. I don't know if this is a good move or a bad move. I don't know if it's going to result in things changing. Biggest move, obviously, is that general manager Jason Botterill, a Winnipegger, let go, fired by the Sabres after he did not make the playoffs in his 3 years at the helm. Sabres, should be noted, have missed the playoffs for 9 straight years. That's a long time. Nearly a decade without playoff hockey for the Buffalo Sabres. And I'm not saying that this is Botterill's fault. He did some good things, he did some bad things. But we'll get into that in a second. But the hard numbers are pretty simple. The Sabres went 88-115-30 over that time. They were destined to miss the playoffs again this season. Even with the 24-team expanded format that the NHL is using this year, the Sabres missed the cut again due to points percentage. Now, the ironic part is that had Buffalo played one more game, their next game was against the Montreal Canadiens. Had they played and won that game, they would have had a higher points percentage than Montreal. Would that have saved Jason Botterill's job? I don't know. I'm thinking that this might be a no based upon the fact that Jack Eichel came out and basically said he's tired of losing. But it's hard to say what would happen if the Sabres went to the playoffs this year. Now, that being said, there was some good stuff. Ralph Kruger seemed to do a great job. He's got the respect of the room. I think Ralph is a great guy. Again, Steinbach guy. These Manitoba connections are doing well for, we're doing well for for Jason Botterill, at least for one season. He did sign Jack Eichel to the maximum contract, so the superstar will remain in Buffalo, which is always good to see. He's used the draft and some trades to really build and rebuild the foundation, which was the Rochester Americans / the young talent in Buffalo. Players like Rasmus Dahlin, Tage Thompson, Casey Mittelstadt, Ryan Johnson, Dylan Cousins, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. Luukkonen is going to be probably their bona fide NHL star again in net. They haven't had one for a while, probably since Dominik Hasek has been there. Maybe Marty Baron you can give some credit to, but I don't know if they've had a goaltending solution for a while now. And that really might have been the fallback. There have been good players who have come through there, and they just haven't found success. That might be a reflection of the team in front of them. But I don't know if they've had a goaltender that could really steal them a game or two yet. And that might be the big thing. The Ryan O'Reilly trade obviously looks bad on Botterill. The Jeff Skinner trade started well, and then he was awarded that monster contract as well, and his numbers fell hard. Jeff Skinner might have been one of the biggest disappointments of the season last year. I don't know. They drafted Dahlin first overall in 2018. Guys like Andrei Svechnikov, Brady Tkachuk, Quinn Hughes were all behind there. I know Dahlin's been a good player for them, has been a solid player for them, but Quinn Hughes might have been the better choice based upon his numbers and what he did in Vancouver. I'm not going to throw hindsight, out and say 2020, Quinn Hughes is a better player, but Dahlin came into a bad situation. Quinn Hughes might not have done as well in Buffalo either. So as of today, or as of Tuesday, I guess, Kevin Adams took over. Kevin Adams will prepare for the NHL draft. He'll be without a number of top scouts, though, who also were fired in the bloodletting that happened. I was shocked, and here's why I was shocked over the whole thing. I was shocked to read that the Rochester Americans, who were owned by the Pegulas and are the AHL affiliate of the Sabres, fired head coach Chris Taylor and assistant coaches Gord Dineen and Toby Peterson. Rochester has been a good team for a long time. Like they were 33-20-9 for 75 points. They were 6 points back of first place Belleville in the AHL's North Division this year, firmly entrenched in a playoff spot. They had lots of turnover, lots of guys up and down, lots of different movement. Taylor has done a magical job running that franchise with all the movement, all the player movement that has happened in the last 9 years of missing the playoffs. And he was fired today. So I don't know where they're going with this Rochester group, but Chris Taylor was the guy down there. Like, they had their guy down there. And now he's gone. So I don't know where they're going with that. I don't know what the plan is. I don't know who's getting rid of them. But, like, I'll read out the names. Not all the names. I'll read out, what's going on here. But Jason Botterill, GM, was fired. Randy Sexton, assistant GM, was fired. Steve Greeley, assistant GM, was fired. Okay, no big deal. Now, remember, we're talking about a team that missed the playoffs. They're going to get into the scouting stuff. They probably already have a lot of their scouting done in terms of the June draft that's coming up, or whenever they're going to hold it now, July, August, whenever it is. Fired with them was the director of amateur scouting, the assistant director of amateur scouting, and then legitimately, a dozen amateur scouts. John Van Boxmeer, who's been with who's been around hockey forever, as a pro scout was fired. Both Chris Barch and Mike Komisarek, who played in the NHL and were player development coaches, were fired as well. And then Dennis Miller from the rehab and development side, he's in the performance department, obviously getting players, rehabbed and ready for action, was fired as well. Like, the Pegulas basically went in and just cleaned house. Because why? If this is economical, if this is because the Buffalo Sabres and the Pegulas aren't making a ton of money right now, I get that. Like, I don't get cleaning out all of your executive. I get the Jason Botterill, exchange in terms of removing him and putting Adams in place. But this is lean. His scouting staff went from 21 to 7 people. Let me just repeat that. He reduced his entire scouting staff by 2/3. So I don't know what's going on in Buffalo. Buffalo's a mess. Buffalo's going to be a mess for a while, it looks like, in terms of how they're running that organization. Don't expect Buffalo to make the playoffs next year, folks. I know Kevin Adams is going in there as green as possible. He's never been a GM before. Former player, former grinder, probably best known for his time with the Carolina Hurricanes. He's in for a tough time if this is how they're going to run their organization now. You've got no scouts. I mean, amateur scouting, I get. Like, if you're going to draft high, you can't really miss on a couple of blue chip prospects. I get that. Like, I understand that. That's not a big deal. But you're removing guys that were doing a ton of work on the later rounds, the third, the fourth, the fifth rounds, when you're looking for those steals, for those guys. But that's been removed now. John Van Boxmeer, who's a pro scout, obviously, surprisingly, was removed. Again, Van Boxmeer's been around hockey forever. And then you remove Randy Sexton and Steve Greeley, who were both highly sought after, highly respected men in the hockey world in terms of their knowledge, their management knowledge, and they're gone. So you wonder if this is ownership maybe putting their hands too heavily on the way the business is being run, on the way the Sabres are being run. But if that's the case, we've seen owners get involved before, and owners who get involved usually don't have a lot of success because they're not very good hockey people. They're better business people. Don't get me wrong. They're intelligent business people. But hockey people, they are not. They invested in a hockey club. They need to let their hockey people do their work. And I get you can make changes. I get that Botterill can be fired. But to get rid of this many people is a bit surprising. Especially when you're running a professional hockey franchise. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how next year runs. We'll see if the Sabres can find a way out of this darkness that they're in. Again, it'll be, you know, if they miss the playoffs next year, it's a full decade. 10 years without going to the playoffs. But, wow. If you're a Buffalo Sabres fan today, you're probably happy that Botterill's gone, but you might be shaking your head over everything else. Because, again, that AHL move is astoundingly bad. Whoever hires Chris Taylor, if there's a team out there, an AHL team needing a coach, Chris Taylor is your guy right now. Without a doubt. He's the best AHL coach on the market. I mean, Stothers is out there and everything. But Chris Taylor legitimately ran a Rochester team that saw all sorts of changes year in and year out successfully. And now he's on the unemployment line. Astounding to me. We'll see how Buffalo does, though. I'm not a big fan of these moves that Buffalo made, but it does affect at least one Winnipegger in Jason Botterill, and certainly might affect another one in Ralph Krueger. But it sounds like Krueger and Adams are at least on the same page, so good for them. We'll see how it progresses. The other big story that came out of Canada West this summer, obviously Lethbridge, shuttering their program was one thing. The Alberta Pandas and the Alberta Golden Bears will no longer participate in the 2020-2021 season, regardless of what happens. They announced yesterday that due to funding issues and due to revenue issues, they will not be participating in the abbreviated season that Canada West hopes to hold this year. And that's a big one, because I don't know if the conference is the same without them. We know the Golden Bears are an absolute force on the ice for the men's hockey program. We know that the Pandas are obviously a force as well for the women's hockey programs. We know that they are undoubtedly the I don't want to say the gold standard. There are some good hockey programs regardless in this, but they legitimately have set the bar for everybody else to catch, for everybody else to try and hurdle. And that's the big thing, is that these two programs are monstrous in the hockey world, and neither of them will participate this year. Even if the season kicks off in January, which Canada West released a statement yesterday saying that they're going to try and do that, it will not be the same without the pandas. And I get the revenue issue. The cuts that have been made in that province, in that Alberta province, by the current government that's there are ridiculous. Like, Alberta's had to close libraries. They've had to close, you know, all sorts of different facilities in order to keep the doors open. And now they're going to say, now they're going to basically say, enough. Like, we can't do sports either. What are you doing in that province? Whoever, Jason Kenney and his government have decimated the education system in that province. And I'm not going to say yay or nay in terms of what they've done. People can vote for whoever they want. But Jason Kenney and his conservative government have destroyed the education program in that province. Hint, hint, wink, wink, guess who we've got in office? Guess who already tried to pass off government budget cuts to post-secondary education here in this province? Folks, I'm standing with the pandas and the golden bears here. I understand the revenue issue. I understand that. I get that. I get that you don't want to blow 3 months worth of hockey money on a season that is kind of nobody's really excited for already anyway. And save it for a six-month season where you have a chance to legitimately compete and play for a national championship. I get that. I understand that. But the question becomes, will there be enough money there next year to run a full program for all the sports that are canceled out in Alberta? How does this affect the Calgary Dinos? How does this affect the Mount Royal Cougars? How does this affect the McEwen Griffins? Are there going to be other schools that say, we're not really in a position? UBC, for example. Trinity Western, for example. Manitoba, for example. We're talking about the bookends of the conference now. The teams that travel the most and the furthest. How are they going to deal with this? Are they going to be in the same boat? What it comes down to, folks, is that we went from a conference of 10 in January to a conference of 9. After the Lethbridge announcement, to a conference of 8, potentially 8 moving forward. And I don't know if we're going to ever be normal again in this conference. I don't know if we're ever going to be whole again in this conference. I'm holding out hope that Lethbridge can find a way to get to bring back their program. But the more that I look at it, the more that we hear about it, the more that it sounds like it, that's not going to be possible. Under the current administration, anyway. And that's sad. Especially when you consider everything that's gone on and everything that's being done in that province. They had their first professional draft pick. Autumn McDougall signed with the NWHL's Buffalo Buttes. Good for her. Congratulations to Autumn, former guest on this show earlier this spring. And now we're talking about potentially not having that option. Alex Posnikov signed on with the PWPHA or PWHPA, whatever they are, whatever that that acronym is. But now we're talking about not having that, and that hurts. So I stand with the Pandas. I stand with the Golden Bears. I'm glad that they are trying to find a way through this without having to cut programs like the University of Lethbridge did. But this is a drastic cut, a drastic cut to everything that's gone on. So when they come back, I'm looking forward to the pandemonium. I want to see the girls back. I want to see the guys back. I want to see the Golden Bears and the Pandas come back and roar back to their place of prominence. I just feel bad for the athletes now, athletes and the coaches. I know we give Howie a lot of crap on this show. I know that Howie, you know, we grit our teeth and say his name and, but he's one of the best coaches in Canada West history. He's one of the best coaches probably in Canada for women's hockey. And I feel bad because he's put in a lot of work to get that program to where it is. And he's worked with a lot of great young athletes, great women who have brought that program along from where it was to where it is. And now it's not. And that hurts. It hurts to say that. So I'm hoping that they come back, and I'm hoping that they do well. Obviously, it sucks that they can't be in the season this year, but I get the reality of it. I get the reality of how brutally the scalpel was taken to their budgets and how some of the tough decisions they've had to make. And I'm sorry for that. For those that are out there wondering if there's going to be a season, I can't say if there's going to be a season now. I don't know. Would I like to say, be able to say, absolutely, we're pushing forward, for sure. But I can't say that. I can't. I don't know if there's going to be a season now. It's going to come down to how affected the rest of the schools are now in terms of their budgeting. And that's tough to say. That's hard for me to say, being that I love the women's hockey programs. The athletes are fantastic, and they produce such outstanding individuals. So it's tough, but I'm going to end the show on something fun though. Cause bad news always sucks, and let's do some good news. Cause there's gotta be some good news out of all of this. There is one thing happening this summer that you're going to be excited about, especially if you got a youngster, a young daughter who wants to play some hockey. July 20th, 24th, back at the Gateway Recreation Center, the Sammy Joe Small Hockey School will be back in session. It will be smaller this year than it has been in previous years. Obviously, they're going to do some social distancing and make sure that they have everything sort of reduced to a safe number where participants can certainly get in, get some learning done, get some knowledge from some of the pros that they bring in, some of the instructors they bring in. But it will happen. Again, it will happen on July 20th to 24th this year out at the Gateway Recreation Center again. So if you're interested in getting into that, get over to the Sammy Joe Small website. You can look it up. It is sammyjoesmall.ca if you're going there. And then just look for the hockey school information at the top and everything like that. There's a hockey school information up there. She'll take you through and get everything going for that. I think that's the right date. I just want to make sure that's the right date again. Yes, 20 to 24. the hockey school runs from 8 to 4 for the entire week. Again, times may vary depending on registration numbers. That's always going to be something that they have to take into consideration. But it will happen. It will get going. There will be on ice. There will be off ice. It's for ages 7 to 17, beginners to elite. Everybody's welcome if you register. There are some fantastic instructors that have been out there. I certainly can say that we've had a chance to interview a handful of them. Obviously, Sammy Joe Small is going to be there. Billy Bridges, who we talked about with Sam earlier, or I mentioned earlier with Sam. Billy Bridges always comes out. Again, he's the husband of Sammy Joe Small. He will be there and certainly have some fun with that. We've seen all sorts of great young players come out and good, you know, senior players as well. So Shelby Bram, Bailey Bram have both been there. Jocelyn the Rocks come out. Janelle Kahanchuk's usually there. She's fantastic as well. Susie Ewan, who comes out all the time, recently inducted into the Manitoba Hockey Hall of Fame, comes out. So lots and lots of different great people that come out and will make that week super fun for everybody if your kids are going to go to that. Just be aware that there is a bursary program as well if you're worried about costs. Sammy Joe Small will try and do everything she can to get your daughter into the school. So email her if you can. Everything is online on the sammyjoesmall.ca website. Go there and check that out. Like I said, I've been there a few times. No radio there this year, obviously, because of social distancing, but I'm going to probably stop in and check out that fun time as well. With that, folks, we are out of here for another week. It has been another fun show. Stay tuned, though. We got some more coming up, some more good, fun, crazy, insane stuff that we do on this show coming up. I do want to let everybody know, before we get out of here, because, again, we're kind of canceling things and trying to work around things, but there will be no survivor pool this year for the playoffs. I know the NHL has talked about bringing the playoffs, getting everything going. There will be no survivor pool, and I want to explain why. Yes, we fully planned on doing it, fully planned on having everything ready to go for that. With the current environment and the current situation in the world with the pandemic, the term survivor, I think, is a very cruel, very uncompromising, discompassionate, whatever the word is, very non-compassionate way to present this pool. So we're not going to do it. I think that it we need to be a little bit more compassionate to the people that have gone through the COVID-19 stuff, and Survivor just presents the wrong image for us, and we're not going to do it this year. I know that the game itself is fun. I know that the pool is fun, but it's one of those hard decisions we had to make that I took a look at, and I said, it's just not the right, it's not the right environment for it. So we're going to put that off for 1 year. It will be back. Absolutely will be back because we have a blast with it. But for this year, only because of the current situation in the world, we're not going to do that. I do want to announce, though, that there will be a co-host coming up when we get back to the studio, in hopefully in September. I won't reveal who it is yet, but it might be somebody you know. It might be somebody that that has been on the show before. So we'll talk about that as things get closer, and maybe bring that person into the fold a little bit more and get them going. But as it stands right now, though, looking forward to getting into the studio with that person and having some chat that way. So with that, folks, we're going to leave you on that note. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio coming up with Skippy. Always a good show there in terms of the music he plays. So stay tuned for that here on 101.5 UMFM. Going to leave you with Saint Motel's A Good Song Never Dies. Great tune from them. Brand new tune from them as well. Great tune, though, as we take you out of here on another Thursday here on The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM. Your equity make the caffeine be your weaponry. What is the reason there never was one needed here? It's all around, but it weighs too much to slow you down. Now it's the time to act, cause the best defense is the time to strike. No, you don't own me, you don't even know me. But when they play it, you can't help but sing along. That's nothing odd, that's nothing wrong. Cause a good song never dies. It just reminds you of where you were the first time it made you cry, the first time you felt alive. No good song ever. No good song ever. The first time they made you cry, the first time you felt alive. No good song ever. There was a moment, a hole opened in the sky, a chance to join their pantheon. For all the times they never heard your battle cry, now even angels sing along. Cause a good song never dies. It just reminds you of where you were the first time it made you cry, the first time you felt alive. No good song never dies.